Welcome to another episode of Curtains at 8 on 91.3 WUKY's podcast. I'm Joshua Bear. The show was originally broadcast October of 2010 with Nick interviewing Fran Taylor, Executive Director, Keeneland Foundation, and Market Development Administrator. The discussion covers Music of the Horse, a variety of classical equine songs played by UK Symphony Orchestra, as well as two books, Keeneland, Then and Now, and Keeneland Entertains. Throw in some country ham recipes and the joys of bourbon, what more could you ask for? Enjoy responsibly.
All right, everyone to their places. Musicians and vocalists over here by the songwriters. Actors, look alive. Dancers on your toes. Authors, novelists, poets, keep busy, people. Entertainers, storytellers, there's no time to waste, no time. Historians and artists, stand by. We're almost ready. Cue the host and the theme. Curtains.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Curtains at 8. I'm Nick Lawrence. Pleased to be here. Pleased to be here with you. Pleased to be here with Fran Taylor from Keeneland. How are you, Fran?
I'm great, Nick. Thank you.
You've got to be one of the busiest people in the world right now. You got everything going on in the horse world, especially the Keeneland meet.
Thank you, Nick. Yes, I am busy. I'm almost as busy as you are. It seemed like everywhere I went this past month, I ran into you playing somewhere.
Playing music, yeah. We've had a lot of gigs. Had a lot of gigs out at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun to play for the people coming off the plane from Switzerland or Germany or wherever they were from.
And I heard it was very well received that, like, children would start dancing and people would start dancing.
People danced. Yeah. One fellow who was having a hard time motivating himself down the concourse there. Had a big brace on his knee and all that. Big fellow.
Yeah.
And he stopped and leaned against the wall and said, "Weep no more, my ladies."
That's fun.
And he came through in tears. It was really beautiful.
That's great.
Kentucky's a fabulous place.
I think we showed a lot of folks that it's not only a fabulous place, but it's a very hospitable place. I think everything I heard from everybody who was a visitor just said they couldn't get over how nice the people were to them in the bluegrass.
I have to unanimously endorse your statement because everybody I talked to had the same effect, same ideas, the same gratitude for great hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
This is English speaking and non-English speaking.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Totally amazing. Well, now, Kentucky is the horse capital of the world. Mm-hmm. Lexington, in particular, is the horse capital of the world. What more could we be doing with horses and what we've done this past week?
Well, we've got so many other things kind of happening that are horse related, and certainly Keeneland's race meet will continue on through October 30th. You know, we race Wednesdays through Sundays, so that's a lot of horse activity for those who love the thoroughbred racing and the beauty of that sport at Keeneland. There's no better showcase for it. But also the horse mania continues downtown, and the horse tails event is still going on with the Lexington Philharmonic.
Hoofbeats and Heartbeats.
Hoofbeats and Heartbeats at Singletary Center, which is phenomenal. If you haven't been out there, please get there. And at some point, and I don't know the dates, but the horse mania horses will move down to the horse park. At least a group of them will. For the Southern Lights, shortly before they're auctioned at Keeneland in our sales pavilion on December 11th. So,
mark your calendars.
Yes, and they're going to be actually using some of the Music of the Horse, which was done with Keeneland and UK Symphony Orchestra, as part of the ambiance for the horse mania horses when they go to the horse park.
How perfect.
Yeah.
How perfect.
That is neat.
John Nardolillo, directing the University of Kentucky Symphony Orchestra, has done a fantastic job. thus far and is getting better all the time. The orchestra is getting better.
He is, and we're working on a horse, Music of the Horse 2, that would be more of a contemporary American music.
Yeah.
Music of the Horse 1, it was a lot of that long hair music, you know.
Well, yeah, you got Carmen her, and you got William Tell and all that sort of Toreador song.
Yes. And Music of the Horse 2 will be more along the lines of the Aaron Copland type of music, maybe Rodeo or...
It was written for the Ballet Russe.
Yes, or yeah. Other... basically, music inspired by or written about the horse is what these Music of the Horse CDs are all about. Good driving music, good, you know, just...
Good listening music, good, familiar
yeah.
tune.
Good house cleaning music, I will vouch for that.
I'll have to ask my housekeeper.
Yeah, right.
Well, we've kind of set up a little bit of music. Why don't we go to music and we'll come back
terrific.
And talk some more. Fran Taylor here from Keeneland. On Curtains at 8 on WKY. This is one of your favorite pieces, mm-hmm. and Fran, it's one of mine. I'm an old horn player.
Yeah.
And so I love the Rossini,
mm-hmm.
Little William Tell. Rossini's Overture for William Tell here on Curtains at 8. Fran Taylor directed me. I did the whole orchestra.
It was spectacular, too.
You've been hanging out with John Nardalillo. You've been taking lessons?
No, he gave Nick some lessons, and I'm kind of jealous. I think I'm going to demand equal time.
He needs to give you lessons.
I tell you, because
I'm not that you need the lessons, but you've got talent.
I'm into it.
If this Keeneland thing doesn't work out, you can go direct the orchestra.
I love this music. It's so inspirational, and it just gets inside of you and demands to be let out.
Tell me what brought Keeneland and this music together.
Well, originally, it's funny. I was driving through Cincinnati many, many years ago, and I heard a radio program, and it was maybe Charge of the Light Brigade, or maybe it was the William Tell Overture, or maybe it was both. But it was the greater is GUC, whatever the Cincinnati
University
Public,
Cincinnati, yeah.
Yeah, radio
WGUC.
Station.
WGUC.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was having sort of an educational forum, taking these songs, playing them, and then taking them apart and kind of saying, here's what was happening when this piece was written. Here's what's happening. Here was what was happening with the history. This is the geography. This is these are the instruments that make you feel like a horse is running in this piece, or
mm-hmm.
that they're going into battle, or it was so educational. And my hope was that we could maybe do something like that with music of the horse and create a learning module with it. And I approached UK about it many years ago, and lo and behold, we're kind of on our way with that because they have developed a music outreach program across Kentucky.
Sounds good. And some of the musicians you see playing at Keeneland
mm-hmm.
are a result of this liaison with the University of Kentucky.
Well, it's pretty amazing.
Partnership.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful partnership, and it continues to grow, as we talked about earlier with hopefully a Music of the Horse 2.
Volume 2.
Okay. And music and this music outreach program, which was made possible through the generosity of Maker's Mark, has created an endowment where UK School of Music is taking this out statewide to the communities that maybe don't have the opportunities to present music to their children. And this is part of that outreach.
It's a great outreach. I recall myself being one of the children in school when on Tuesday afternoon at 2:15, WLAP AM, I believe
mm-hmm.
it was, broadcast Beethoven, Brahms, Mozart every Tuesday afternoon, and the teacher would stop, Mrs. Greer would stop the class. We'd all kind of put our heads down or look out the window and listen to this gorgeous music and somebody explaining it. And that, among several other factors, were great influences in my life. And there are kids someplace waiting for you to show up and teach them all about classical music and horses.
Sure.
How about we play another piece?
That would be great.
Okay. Let's just take a gamble here. Fran Taylor here with me on Curtains at 8. We're playing music, having a good time. We're chattering a bit. Mm-hmm. Fran is using her musical skills to direct me as if I were an orchestra. And so far, I have not played a bad note.
Well, we've been talking through many of these, only pausing to kind of direct our favorite parts, or conduct, rather.
Yeah. Our business at hand, however, we need to get to.
Sure.
Of course, we've got the Music of the Horse, and it's available in CD form mm-hmm. at the gift shop.
Yes, and online.
At Keeneland.
Yes.
Online also?
Right, at Keeneland.com, but through the gift shop. And UK, also, UK School of Music sells it, I believe, at some of their concerts. So look for it there. Because it really is a terrific... It's a terrific CD.
I've heard that you've got a gift shop going into the Lexus store, new Lexus store up by Liberty Road.
We have. I think the official opening is Friday, so we'll have to see if they're carrying it there. But hopefully they're carrying these two new books that we've got out.
Okay, yeah, that's what we came here for, to talk about the books. Two books, Keeneland Then and Now and
Keeneland Entertains,
which is a fascinating book. I happen to have a copy of it on my front entry table, and I have gone to it for reference three times.
Oh, my goodness.
Three times.
Great.
Southern hospitality. Mm-hmm. Kentucky.
We say bluegrass, traditional bluegrass hospitality and favorite recipes.
Yeah.
There are over 260 recipes, as a matter of fact, and some of them are never before published. But it's really a book about the lifestyle that has evolved.
It's not just a cookbook.
Sure. No, there's 12 chapters on lifestyle.
Okay. For example, what are some of the chapters?
For example, well, it starts off with companies coming, and it talks about if you...
Oh, my God, companies coming.
Well, yeah. And, if you live in Lexington and you have friends that have discovered Keeneland... Or former Lexingtonians or Kentuckians, every April and October,
I did a man on the street at Keeneland once for the Bureau, Downtown uh-huh. Visitors Bureau, and I asked them why they were coming. They said, well, Keeneland's on, and we come back to visit every time and have family reunion.
Yeah, it's amazing. People plan weddings around it. People plan their lives around it.
Football games.
Yes, they come in and... Actually, we have folks that come in from places like Chicago to work the race meet, or California to work the race meet, and they come in every April and October, and it's amazing how the race meets kind of reflect everything that's going on with Central Kentucky and vice versa. There's just a real... We've all evolved around racing and somewhat around sales. And so there's a number of chapters on how to do things, how to host a brunch, how to have dinner after the races. And every chapter pretty much has menus, and it also has history woven through it, history of how
so you can serve a dish and also talk about it.
Right, and we talked about how to do a bourbon tasting, for example, and that's a useful tool when you're trying to recruit people.
How do you do a bourbon tasting?
Well, you start out with a variety of different bourbons. We say 5 to 8, and you switch the bourbons from their original containers into a nondescript, hopefully uniform container, because people are savvy enough these days to recognize what a Maker's Mark bottle looks like or what maybe a Woodford Reserve bottle looks like, and so or Buffalo Trace or Bullet or whatever. And so you start by giving them some instruction and actually ask them to keep track of the different bottles that you'll be pouring, and you tell them to look for things like the nose of it or the...
As if it were wine.
Yes. The aftertaste that you have, the way it feels...
Finishes.
The way it finishes, the way it feels in your tongue, the way, you know, we give lots of words to use, like oaky, toasty, you know, whether it's warm. but these are words that that people use to describe bourbons. And we say, you know, it's a great recruiting tool if you no longer live in Kentucky. John Karloftis has used it for years at his Bucks County home to talk people into coming to Keeneland. Or coming to Lexington, coming to Keeneland for a visit. So we say don't start off with a long-winded speech about the history of bourbon, but you can work in little tidbits as people are tasting.
I've had the beautiful experience lately of tasting the new 46.
Isn't that great?
The Maker's Mark 46.
Yes.
Talked to Bill Samuel on the line about it. And Bill said that the recipe his family had derived for the original Maker's Mark was intended for people who didn't especially like the taste of bourbon.
It's a much softer,
sweeter,
got a softer finish to it.
And the 46, he said, was designed for people who do like bourbon.
Ah.
And it is fabulous.
Well, and I'm fascinated by how they do it. You know, they are doing some sort of unique things to make that flavor happen. And Bill said it's the most fun he's had in, I don't know, 30 years, 40 years, is creating that new bourbon.
He said they went about it in a scientific way. They said they set the criteria for what they wanted to achieve. Then they set out batch by batch by batch,
right,
trying it out. Which now you got to take into account the aging factor.
Sure,
this is not overnight laboratory success.
Right.
GL70 may not have been invented if it had to go through the same time period of aging that the alcohol does. But anyway, he said this was trial number 46.
That's
why it got its name.
Right, and I think everybody that I've been around who's tasted it really gives it a big 2 thumbs up.
Definitely, definitely. Show me some pictures there.
Well,
I like pictures. Radio loves pictures, too.
Yes, let me show you all these great pictures. Well, actually, I opened up to the bourbon tasting chapter because it was driving me crazy that I didn't have the four components directly rolling off my tongue as we talked about it. But the color is one that we forgot. And
color.
Then the nose or bouquet,
mm-hmm,
the way when you inhale deeply over...
Right.
How it smells.
The aroma.
The aroma, thank you. The taste or flavor, and then the finish, as we
mm-hmm
talked about. So, we have menus that accompany this. When we did it, when we were doing it for the book, we had catfish fingers, and we had these delicious things called, we called them ham and brie crostinis. That wasn't the operative name of
ham and brie crostinis,
and it uses you do a baguette and you thinly slice the baguette and you lightly brush it with butter and toast it, and then you put a layer of onion and garlic jam, which sounds bizarre.
Onion and garlic, no, it sounds
it's
great.
It's Stonewall Kitchen, and Fresh Market sells it, or you can buy it online through Stonewall Kitchen. They're up in Maine, but they sell it here in town. My mouth is watering while I'm talking about this.
I'm with you.
And then you shave. You get shaved country ham. Get it shaved and not sliced.
Yeah.
You can do that at any of your grocery stores or Critchfields or Kroger's, wherever. And then you put some spreadable brie on top. There's Alouette is a brand of spreadable brie. And then you run these under the broiler. And, my gosh. I mean, they are so delicious. And so that was one of the things we had. Those catfish fingers were great, and these little ham and brie crostinis, which we actually referred to for the longest time as Becky's hoo-haws, because Becky Reinhold is the one who gave us the recipe and made the first batch, and we didn't know what the real name of
it was. So this is Becky's recipe.
Well, it's Becky's recipe, but, you know, like everybody else, she got it from somebody, I think. But the funniest thing about the bourbon tasting is people really got into it. I was one of those that's like, no, I don't need a piece of paper to record my. I'll remember. Well, if you're having a really good bourbon tasting, you kind of lose track of stuff. And
that was nicely, politely, and delicately put.
Yes, and by the end of it, we passed out to kind of finish it off. We passed
out. You can't say passed out.
I guess we can't. We handed out bourbon balls.
Handed out.
And people were so into it, they were trying to guess the type of bourbon in the bourbon balls. So they didn't want the evening to end.
It was really so much fun.
Well,
one of the big differences between wine tasting and bourbon tasting has to do with spitting. Wine tasters spit. Yeah. I actually joined the wine club here once upon a time. Went to my first meeting, and all these people had little tin cups on a ribbon around their neck. And I, of course, am a product of Depression-era parents. I can't see wasting anything. So that didn't sit well with me.
Well, we urge people to do small amounts for the tasting because you really do.
It's for a taste, is what you want.
So you can taste the finish. And we do provide what's called a dump vessel so you can pour if you have any left over, which...
But no tin cups around the neck, surely.
No tin cups around the neck. And the nice thing about a bourbon tasting, Nick, you can open all these bourbon bottles. Let's say you have 8 different bourbons. The bourbon's not going to go bad. Now, the wine, you have to drink it or it will go bad. So,
but that's a positive, too.
Oh, it's a big positive.
I've used that excuse many times.
For drinking.
Here,
well,
one more, have some Madeira.
I take it as a big positive for the bourbon tasting because it's an investment like wine, but it's one that lasts many years, although it disappears alarmingly fast at parties.
Bourbon also is great for cooking.
Oh my gosh, there are so many recipes.
Jonathan's got recipes.
Yes.
You've got them at the kitchen.
I counted up. I think there's 10, 11, 12, 13 with Maker's Mark in it. That's not counting the other recipes that have other brands of bourbon
and
or just bourbon.
They've got distinctive taste, too.
You get
something from a reserve, and it's going to be completely different from Maker's Mark or
they
Weller's.
They have a wonderful personality. They do.
Bobby Flay was here some years ago and worked with your chef in the kitchen. And one of the things that enamored him was the bourbon sauce, bourbon sauces and cooking with bourbon.
Yes. I met him when he first came to Keeneland, and I think I was actually embarrassed that I didn't know who he was, and I asked him to introduce himself. I think he thought we were all just, a little backwards that we weren't on to. It was when the Food Network was just kind of getting going and all that. So, but he's come back, and he's actually come back and won stakes races at Keeneland.
Is that right?
Yes, he is. He is a supporter of the thoroughbred industry, so we like that a lot. We do.
Good Keeneland then and now. The now is a very fleeting moment, isn't it? Because you've got a new press conference called Friday.
Well, but you know, it's interesting, Nick, and what ties back into the Keeneland Library is the then portion of the book is from our library's collection of fantastic old vintage photographs from the days before Keeneland opened, actually.
I love the way they're tinted, that sort of
sepia tone. Yes, tones. They're the real McCoy, and I've called it a flip book before, and I don't know that that's an actual term for
it,
but it's
a
two-sided
book.
It's more horizontal than vertical. And it's so if you can imagine, it opens up because it's a very horizontal, I think it's 9 and something by 6 and something inches. When it opens up, you get almost a panoramic effect for the images that spread out over 2 pages. So it's like when you look at a starting gate with 12 horses charging out of it and you're really zeroed in on that gate, it gives you an idea of how horizontal that 2-page spread will be on a book that's this size. So half the book is real vibrant color photos that really try to capture the feel, the mood, the beauty of contemporary Keeneland, the color. And then the other half of the book is these wonderful sepia tone and black and white photos that really tell the history of Keeneland.
I took your suggestion and I opened the book as you suggested, wide.
Uh-huh.
And I see something that is kind of hard to explain in terms of Keeneland that I understand. Do you see that these critters are not exactly horses? They look sort of like Angus beef.
Before the horse park opened, Nick, Keeneland was kind of the community place for horse shows, dog shows. On the previous page there, there's a wonderful Dalmatian show, Dalmatians in the paddock shot, and pony clubs and car clubs having shows at Keeneland. And then when it was more than Keeneland could kind of handle, because we weren't a full-time kind of place like we are these days. So when the horse park opened, Keeneland was very supportive of that. And many of those events, as you know, like the dog shows and pony club shows and all that kind of thing, moved to the horse park. So it was really a period of time in the 60s and 70s where Keeneland became a real community hub for lots of activities.
Here's a picture of Bucky.
There's it from 1968.
I was going to say mid-60s.
Yeah. And he looks, you can definitely pick him out. When he first started, he wore jockey silks to when he blew the horn, you know, for the announcement of that there was an upcoming race and to sort of herald the 2 minutes to post point in time. Well, and he actually played the little opening for Music of the Horse CD. That's actually Bucky Salee, George Salee. And he has been at Keeneland 49 years.
I was going to say he probably covered most of the 75.
Well, he's been there since the 60s.
What was the original setup for Keeneland? You say it was sort of a fairgrounds type
thing? Well, I mean, it was really meant to be a model racetrack and nothing else. It was meant to be a model racetrack. So that was how it opened in the 1935, October 15th, 1935. And it was sort of a happy accident that we started having horse sales there. It was a lovely facility and, you know, people knew it was only being used for two race meets a year. So we did a few early sales, and then during World War II, because there were wartime travel restrictions, we had to we decided to have horse sales here instead of carting the really fine horses to Saratoga to be sold in July for the yearling sales. And so in 1943, we had our first horse sale for yearlings, and 2 years later, one of the horses coming out of the Keeneland yearling sale won the Kentucky Derby.
And that was
Hoop Jr.
That was Hoop Jr.
Yes. Hooper.
That's got to be a real kick in the pants then for the Keeneland racing.
Well,
and
it really
and sales.
It helped launch the sales. That and some international success in the 70s really Keeneland took off because we started attracting international buyers. And now Keeneland is by far the largest thoroughbred auction house in the world, and we sell, you know, routinely to over 50 foreign countries. So it's like a little United Nations during, especially our September and November sales.
If a person wanted to attend the sales, does one have to be credentialed?
No, anyone can come to the sales. We just ask that people respect the fact that it's kind of our factory floor. They can't sit in the sales pavilion. Those seats are reserved, but there's glass all around the sales pavilion, and there are actually seats where people can sit and look and watch, and there's monitors everywhere, so you can watch the horses go through the ring. And in the most, I think, exciting thing is watching the horses as they're prepped for the sale, as they're being walked back and forth so that a prospective buyer can take a look at them. And it's just a beehive of activity during those sales.
And your auctioneers are?
Well, our chief auctioneer is Ryan Mahan, and the Caldwell brothers are still very much involved. And Kurt Becker, who calls the races, is one of our announcers, and John Henderson. We've got a whole cast of bid spotters, and these guys are such pros. I mean, they're really, really good. And the consigners, the folks who are selling the horses, now go all out, you know, to really woo the prospective buyers, and there's a social side to that, and also they're just, you know, everybody tries to make them feel comfortable and at home and welcome.
Tell me about the philanthropic work of the Keeneland Foundation, Keeneland Guild, Keeneland Association.
Well, it's the Keeneland Foundation is a 501c3 arm of Keeneland Association. Did I say Keeneland Foundation is an arm of the Keeneland Association? And over the years, we've given back more than $20 million to the community and to the industry, and that's a very conservative estimate. It doesn't include things like some of the Maker's Mark. Maker's Mark, through our partnership with them, have raised over $5 million for places like the Markey Cancer Center or this UK Music Outreach or the Secretariat Center, Maker's Mark Secretariat Center out at the Horse Park. So unfortunately, with the economy as it's been, our ability to give back has been compromised the last couple of years because we are a corporate foundation that give from our profits. We're not an endowed foundation. You know, giving from a pool of money.
Right.
I mean, as you all know, as everyone knows, even the endowed foundations took a hit when their
I think everybody has
dropped.
A 401 knows what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, exactly. So what we've tried to do in the meantime, and the reason these books are part of the Keeneland Legacy series, is that the profits from the sale of this Keeneland Entertains book and the Keeneland Then and Now book, and then our new book, newest book coming out in December, will be a book called Keeneland, A Thoroughbred Legacy. It's about the first 75 years of Keeneland, very much a history book. And though the profits from the sale of these books go back to the foundation and back out to the community. So we're looking for ways to create revenue streams to continue to be able to give back even when times aren't as good as they have been.
There's some great books out talking about Lexington, the bluegrass, Kentucky, Keeneland, other features that we know of. And they are great gifts for people who once lived here but now are stuck in some godforsaken place like Los Angeles. And my daughter has a coffee table full of Lexington books,
mm-hmm.
and it keeps her sane and keeps her sanity intact.
Yeah, I'm afraid to start mentioning them, but you know, there's so many beautiful Archambault books and
yep.
just so many great books. And Eclipse Press, who we worked with on these books, has published a number of wonderful books, and you know, their UK Press has classic books. But these books, we've tried to combine the fact the photography is such a big part of these books,
mm-hmm.
so they're fun to look at even if you're not able to sit down and fully read them at this point. And especially the Keeneland Then and Now, it's basically a picture book, but the history book, which is coming out in December, is going to have a lot of fun facts that nobody's ever heard before.
Now, are these books ascribed to you as author?
Well, the first two that we've been talking about are
Keeneland Then and Now and Keeneland.
Yeah, and I had a co-author, the designer who helped Matt Anderson on the Keeneland Then and Now book, is a fellow staff member at Keeneland. And then Keeneland Entertains, basically, I did write it, but Lee Thomas is a fantastic photographer. He's not
saw Lee the other night
yeah,
at the
great.
Kentucky Experience.
Yeah.
He is one fabulous photographer.
His ability to use the natural light and is phenomenal and very, very much in evidence with this particular book. And then Suzanne Dornman with Eclipse Press, The Blood Horse, was the designer and did a fabulous job. The next book coming out has 10 different authors for different chapters. And
who are the authors?
It's, well, Mary Jean Wall.
Who was here just a short week or so ago.
Talking
yeah.
about Kentucky became Southern.
And that really ties into your Keeneland Entertains book.
It does.
It really
it does.
Ties
All
in beautifully. In fact, I thought about asking Mary Jean to come uh-huh. with us this afternoon.
Well, one of the things I say in the beginning of the Keeneland Entertains book is maybe because of the fact we're one of the most northern of the southern states, we try harder when it comes to southern hospitality.
I think we've just got it down to a smooth cultural phenomenon.
Mary Jean was one of the authors, Vicki Mitchell, Rena Bear. There's a number of them, and it's pretty fascinating, and lots of pictures that people will have never seen before will be in that next book.
Okay, and you've got a press conference Friday?
Friday, making an announcement.
To talk about, be
listening for it later in the day on different media outlets, and maybe the next morning if we're lucky, it'll be in the paper. But that would be it's going to be good. So stay tuned.
Okay, a big announcement, I presume.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good size.
Mm-hmm.
Involves horses.
Well,
people.
It involves a lot of things.
University of Kentucky.
Uh huh.
Okay, basketball.
Mm-mm.
No basketball.
Kind of in a way.
Oh my goodness.
Now I can't say anymore, Nick. Don't do this to me.
My curiosity.
Play another song.
My curiosity runs high, Fran Taylor.
Well, maybe I'll tell you afterwards.
Call me Friday.
Okay, I'll call you Friday morning. Give you the scoop. We're going to call you Scoop Lawrence from
now
on.
No, not Scoop Lawrence. I'm curious. Can't stand to wait. Christmas doesn't come soon enough for me. Fran Taylor's who's here from Keeneland to talk about Keeneland Entertains, a great book that she has put together. I started to say written, but that's not exactly right. It's written and put together, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
Sort of author, editor, publisher.
Sort of. Yeah, I mean, we had help editing it, but it's a labor of love, definitely.
Sounds good. A couple of quotes.
Yeah, we were laughing during the last music. Cool selection. I'm going to read a quote from Joe Palmer from his book, This Was Racing in 1939. And he says, "For real racing, the thing to do is run down to Keeneland. It only lasts 10 days, and you'll see why, because racing has a social side in Lexington, and 10 days are about all a man of middle age can stand." And then I also read Louis Russell, who was the trainer and part owner of Risen Star, a quote from him in 1988. And he said, "The first time I came to Keeneland, I looked at this place and immediately fell in love. You look around and all you see is beauty. If ever there was a place meant for a racetrack, this is it. From then on, I wanted to always come back with a good horse, with a good chance to win. It was my dream." I got some other great quotes, too. Dick Francis, I got a quote from him the month before he died.
Dick Francis, the author, yeah.
Yes, and he was a frequenter of Keeneland. You want me to, do we have time to read it? He said, "Going racing at Keeneland, especially for the running of the Royal Chase, which was our steeplechase, has been a highlight for me over many years. It's like drinking my favorite wine. Both are sophisticated but unpretentious. Both are savored and appreciated. And both are all the better for being enjoyed amongst friends."
Kentucky Keeneland Entertains, it's on sale now at the gift shop at Keeneland and probably Joseph Beth and
Barnes & Noble and lots of shops around town. L.V. Harkness for friends.
Look for it. Ask for it.
Yep.
Okay, Fran Taylor from Keeneland.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being a part of Curtains at 8. You're listening to Curtains at 8 on WUKY.
That was an archive Curtains at 8. Originally aired October 2010 with Nick Lawrence and guest Fran Taylor, Executive Director, Keeneland Foundation. Thank you for listening to 91.3 WUKY's podcast. I'm Joshua Bear, and take care.